Hi, everyone. Welcome to Meet the Rockadopolis. I'm Yislike Rockadopolis.
And I am Lance Rockadopolis.
And today we'll be focusing on part four of the book, More Than Two. And this section is titled Polyreality. It's the longest section of the book and is in some ways the most insightful and the most relevant to us. But instead of following the structure of part four, like we've done with the other parts, we've developed five themes based on the section, but focusing on our own power exchange dynamic, as well as our polyandry goals. And these themes are managing commitments, mental and emotional wellness, boundaries, and identities. So the first theme is commitments. The book talks about how important it is for poly people to take care of themselves and each other. Currently, for me, that means juggling my family duties with my relationship with Lance. We both have teenage children. Mine is about to leave home this fall.
Yeah, I'm going to touch on commitments a little later. I think I mentioned a little later on that when you're bringing someone new into the relationship, there's a certain responsibility, and I'll touch upon that a little bit more.
So the next theme that we want to talk about is health. So the authors provide some discussion about physical, mental, and emotional health. They provide information on 10 types of STDs, from gonorrhea to HIV. Of course, we've made all of our prospective partners provide current paperwork on their STD status, but because we're looking for lifetime commitments, we also need to think about age-related health issues. And I think it's interesting that the book doesn't bring up age at all in any context. But if you're going to have long-term relationships with people, I mean, if they are meant to be long-term, I think you got to think about what it means to age in healthy ways. And in general, you also have to think about things like how do polygamists and polyandrists get health insurance for all their spouses? And if and when people do get sick, like with serious problems like cancer, I mean, we'll have to figure out how to deal with all of that in a domestic situation.
Yeah, that's interesting. As thorough as the book is, it really doesn't talk about any of those things.
They do talk about mental health. They mention how chronic mental and emotional struggles, from chronic anxiety to schizophrenia, can interfere with the healthy functioning of a poly relationship or even the entire pod. And yeah, of course, schizophrenia is going to be a problem, right, with any relationship. You know, even though online there are videos from people who are schizophrenic who are doing pretty well, still in a high stress, high stakes romantic situation, I can see how that disease could cause a lot of extra stress. And the authors do talk about how people with significant mental health issues should always disclose those issues at the start of a relationship. I mean, polyamory obviously requires a great deal of mental and emotional stamina. To me, it seems like you'd have to be an uber person mentally and emotionally to be able to maintain high levels of intimacy with multiple people.
And by that, I take it to mean you don't mean somebody driving for Uber.
Correct, yes. Jesus. Of course, I don't consider myself to be an Uber person in the Nietzschean sense, but that doesn't stop me from trying. I know I'll have to level up to deal with the stress of doming a bunch of people in close quarters. I mean, just two was a challenge, but I am up to the challenge. I'm up to at least trying to get that shit done. Or at least I know I will be when the time comes. So, in terms of mental health, I know that I need my alone time for sure.
Yeah, I know that I like Sunday afternoons or evenings for my alone time. That's when I listen to old-time radio. it allows me a couple of hours to be transported somewhere else. And it gives me a reset point to allow me to tackle the stressors of the upcoming week.
And there's also the need for physical and emotional and even mental or intellectual joy. And everyone, or most people, do need physical joy for their mental health, not just from sex and kinky play, but from physical activities. I definitely feel joyful when I finish a good workout, physically and mentally.
You mentioned earlier that the authors put a lot of stress on communication, and that is exceptionally important when people are transitioning from monogamy to polyamory. It is critical that you ask a lot of questions and be open to what the answers are. One of the most important thing to realize is that you are bringing another living, breathing, feeling person into your world, and that person's feelings matter. You can't ethically say that we'll just dabble in this poly thing for a while, and if it doesn't work out, we'll just go back to being monogamous. The authors liken it to having children, right? It's a really big commitment. You can't just say that we'll have a child, and if we don't like that experience, we'll just give it up for adoption. A lot of newbies are also looking for what they call a, quote, closed triad. And I've heard what they're talking about described as looking for a unicorn. You know, it's a very rare thing. Typically, that situation looks like this. A male-female couple are looking to bring a bisexual woman to spice up their sex life. Their rationale being that they don't want each other just running around and having a bunch of hookups. The kind of commitment they're looking for, a bisexual woman to spice up their sex life, seems like it's less threatening, especially for the man. The problem is, though, that the couple is approaching this whole scenario with a second bisexual woman. She's coming into a relationship on a completely unequal balance of power. The couple is setting the terms of the relationship. The couple is offering sex with both of them, but you will most likely be limited in that you can't have sex with one without the other, and you are expected to love them both equally. If the extra woman doesn't end up connecting with one of them, then she's obligated to break off the relationship with the couple. Also, the authors are generally against the idea of fidelity, rejecting the idea that one can forbid a relationship with another person. Quote, people who identify as polyamorous generally won't be excited about entering a restrictive relationship. It is the author's experience that a closed triad almost always forms organically. One member of the couple starts dating another, and then they develop an attraction for and a relationship with the other member of the couple. The authors also mentioned that a poly relationship won't fix a broken relationship. If anything, it'll put a tremendous strain on it.
So the authors also talk about identity a couple of times in part four. The first instance is when the couples see themselves as one unit. I think a psychological term for that might be enmeshment, when two people's identities and sense of self get tangled up together, and it's not a good thing, it's considered pathological. Moreover, in general, according to the authors, most people aren't attracted to units. They're attracted to individual people. Regardless, the authors think that both people in the couple should be developing their individuality just on general principles. So I do think that Lance and I have some enmeshment issues. I think a lot of our arguments and other communication issues are linked to enmeshment. But there's got to be a way for us to be able to untangle the threads and keep the intimacy. Because meshes aren't necessarily tangled. Yahoo defines a mesh as a material made of a network of wire or thread, such as a netting or a net or a sieve, or even a network of some kind like the internet, like power grids. So meshes are made to catch things and hold them, but they aren't a solid material, so they can let the small stuff fall through. I'm really getting into this extended metaphor. I know that Lance likes to feel trapped physically, but not mentally, and definitely not emotionally. So my definition of identity, which I took from an anthropology class, was that it's a, quote, representational technology. And this comes from an anthropology book called Tangled Up in School, and it was written by Jan Nesper. So an identity is a tool to get what you want, whether it's a job or a relationship or admission to a specific subculture. But beyond social needs, an identity can be a very personal and powerful way to understand and accept parts of oneself. So, for example, I have the identity of femdom in the kink world, but I have the identity of master with Lance. And of course, I'm using my own definitions of those words because in the kink world, there are very few, if any, standardized definitions for our terminology. So we just have to sort of choose a definition and go with it. But anyway, to me, femdom is a general term for a woman who is a top in BDSM and engages in some degree of power exchange, whereas a person with the identity of master is someone who owns slaves. In my case, fully consensual, kinky slaves. But if I stopped being Lance's master and declined to play casually and gave up on power exchange altogether, I would no longer have the identity of femdom or master. And it would be pretty intense for me if I lost those identities. Because while they exist largely in social worlds, right? I'm only a femdom and a master in the kink world. Nonetheless, those roles are very important to my sense of self. My kinkiness is at the core of who I am, and losing it would be devastating. I could move on, but I suspect there would be a long mourning period for the part of me that was lost. That doesn't mean that I'm going to change as a person in order to meet someone else's needs, but different subs have different needs. And I'll need to update my repertoire and strategies to be able to create another different kind of rich and powerful TPE dynamic.
Yeah, the book has a section titled, You Won't Change Each Other. Specifically, they're talking about that in the context of a relationship where one person is a committed monogamist and the other is poly. The authors do not recommend that people try to change others. In those cases, a person can't actually or shouldn't be changed or be expected to change if they are into poly or vice versa. It leads to hurt feelings, and feelings of one partner is trying to control the other or becoming someone you are not comfortable with. This can lead to a loss of identity that you just mentioned. But in many fundamental ways, I think you have profoundly impacted and have changed me. You have helped me embrace my identity as a slave. And we've talked about helping each other see the other's perspective. That alone has had a big impact on how we go about the world. But this adventure, this poly adventure, is exciting to me because, as I've mentioned before, while we have had some small experiences and forays into polyandry, I don't think my jealousy has been fully tested. To quote the book, simply being comfortable with the existing relationship is not necessarily a good indicator of how much success a monogamous person will have in a mono-poly relationship. But having this book provides so many insights and ways of looking at jealousy. I found it extremely helpful. Some of these insights or warnings are, quote, mourning the loss of the relationship that was expected. That's kind of interesting to me. I don't think it's true in our case. I have never had an expectation of exclusivity. So that's kind of helpful for me that I don't really have to worry about that. But that is something to be mindful of. Another is, quote, polyamory as a problem to be managed rather than a source of joy for a loved one. Maybe there is some truth to that. Like, I find myself trying to manage jealousy to a certain extent. Or it might be a problem if the slave husbands don't get along. The other item to be conscious of, quote, some will try to establish security by limiting what their poly partners do. They point out that doing so injures the poly person's partners the most. And I definitely don't want to do that. And that goes against everything that I am.
On the other hand, I do want to limit what my partners do. And I want to push their boundaries in the directions that I choose. But over the years, I've learned that there are limits to kinky power exchange, even if both the master and the slave want to transcend those limits as much as possible. And I'm using the word transcend deliberately instead of breaking or violating. And we've used the word violate a lot, and I love that word. But I'm beginning to think that there's a growth process associated with TPE that's less incremental and more holistic. Like, our whole selves are changing, or could change if we let them, through our various struggles and the work that we do in TPE. And that's kind of scary, in a way, because change can be traumatic. It can be devastating. I think we talked about the sublime in previous episodes. The sublime is a term that is used in philosophical aesthetics since the time of the ancient Roman philosophers. And today we see the word sublime as meaning like the best thing ever, the most delicious meal, the greatest song, the best sex. But before the 20th century, all the way back to ancient Rome, the word sublime indicated an event or an idea or a work of art that was so shocking, so devastating, that it utterly transformed huge swaths of human culture. Think Beethoven, Einstein, Chuck Berry, Kurosawa. And I think that some relationships can be so powerful that they actually force people to change. It's like they created a natural disaster inside of a person. I'm thinking back to Voltaire and Candide. I mean, they just suffer one disaster after another, and eventually they settle down and focus on cultivating their own garden. But I've experienced this type of relationship a few times over the years. They've all been very different and have changed me in different ways, mostly by creating incentives to break my own rules, rules that I would have normally maintained in order to protect myself emotionally and to maintain my personal dignity. And in fact, I've never had a relationship that didn't end well, in the sense that I came out of it worse off than when I went into it. So for the sake of this discussion, where is the sublimity in polyamory? I have no doubt that it's a challenging and rewarding lifestyle, but where's the sublimity? Where's the shock and awe? Cultures don't develop without interference from the outside. I don't doubt that new lovers can reinvigorate passion. And I get why polyamorists have rules. Totally makes sense. But what does it all amount to? What are they creating? Ultimately, what's the point?
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is self-development. I find the whole idea of polyamory to be very emotionally and intellectually challenging and effortful. So in that sense, I can see like that level of effort being put into it would cause somebody to grow as a person and understand other people. So is there a sublimity there? Possibly.
So a lot of people talk about monogamous marriages as an opportunity for individual personal development. I mean, I've heard so many times ministers and psychologists talk about how staying married, even through your struggles, is a path to personal self-development. So I can see polyamory being used that way as well.
Yes.
You can't be in a long-term relationship with someone without having to develop.
But a lot of the people that I've noticed in 50-year marriages are just going through a routine. They're just going through the motions. They're just staying together because that's what their identity is, that they couldn't imagine anything else.
Their marriage is their identity.
Right.
And they're stuck with it. They're clinging to it because it's so important to them. They don't have another thing, maybe.
And the book does talk about that a little bit. I don't think that's what they mean, but that's what I see in long-term relationships.
Huh. In all of them, have you ever seen a healthy long-term relationship?
I have. My aunt and uncle, I think, have a healthy relationship, and they're constantly talking, and they know how to talk to each other. But like my grandparents, I went to their 50-year like ceremony, and I don't know. I mean, that's definitely something to celebrate, but it seems like they were just in a routine going through the motions.
But there are practicalities associated with monogamous marriage.
Certainly, but is that developmental? Is that sublime?
Right. I don't know. All right. Well, this concludes our discussion of part 4 of More Than Two. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. So part 5 of More Than Two focuses mostly on issues pertaining to poly networks and the poly social world, and very little of it pertains to our relationship and polyandry. So this episode will conclude our discussion of Less Than Two.
More Than Two. Not Less Than Two.
Shit. That would make it really simple, wouldn't it? So this episode... Me and my buddy down under, right? So our next episode will be a discussion of sexual utopias. So until then, have a great week.